Football Weekly is on the air.
Here's the snap.
Drops back. Throws the ball. The long ball downfield.
Down the line. Breaks the tackle. He's still going. 50. 45.
40. 30.
He's going to go all the way.
Runs left to the 20. To the 10. To the 5.
Brady strips into the end zone.
Touchdown.
Touchdown.
Touchdown. Touchdown.
This is Wayne Larrabee with Hamarkish. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly, an in-depth look at professional football this week. Coming up, big games, playoff implications, New Orleans, Carolina, Chicago, Philadelphia.
There's coaches on the hot seat everywhere, including Dallas and Washington, where those clubs will meet this week. And what is the future at the University of Texas? Could it be a famous broadcaster?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee on Pro Football Weekly. The Way We Hear It features news and information from around the NFL, and we're joined, of course, as we are each week, by Eric Edholm of Shutdown Corner on Yahoo Sports. Well, guys, let's talk a little bit about what's going on around the league and the way we hear it. The Detroit Lions, Hub, defeated the Chicago Bears for the second time this season, 21-19, many moons ago. They were 6-3, in control of the division. Aaron Rodgers was about to go down with injury in the whole bit. They were in firm control. But since then, they have lost four of their last five games, including that 61-yard field goal heartbreaker at home on Monday night this past week. Jim Schwartz, is he in big trouble in Detroit?
He is in huge trouble, Wayne. It's almost indefensible at this point for this team with this talent to basically have had a three-game lead, because they had a two-game lead plus the tiebreaker over the Bears. At that point, it looked like the Packers might be done. And they now are in third place and the only team, it seems, in that division that doesn't control their own destiny. You've got players, Ndamukong Suh coming out and saying it's not Schwartz, it's the players. We just need to play better. And then Reggie Bush kind of gave him the kiss of death late this week, Eric, when he said, the problem with this team is we're too undisciplined, we make too many dumb mistakes. And then seemingly realizing what he was saying, Bush said, of course, that's not the coaches, that's the players. But that is always the head coach when that is the problem. And so the combination of some strange game management decisions, maybe the most undisciplined team we've seen in the NFL in years, is almost certain to cost Schwartz his job unless they somehow back into the playoffs and make some noise.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You look at this team play, and if they had a bunch of, like, pass interference calls or, you know, things like that, you say, all right, at least they're out there competing. But it's always the pre-snap and post-snap penalties that seem to murder this team out there. I mean, jumping off sides, line up in the neutral zone, personal fouls, 15 yards at a clip. I mean, that's the stuff that really kills them. And then recently, the last five games have been the turnovers. I mean, they've just been absolute killers. So some of these are on Matthew Stafford. Some of these are on Calvin Johnson for dropping the ball. Reggie Bush has put it on the turf and claimed not to ever fumble again. I want to see it happen. So I do think the players deserve some of the blame, but Schwartz is going to take a lot of this heat, because this team, it's not like this sprung on them this year. This has been symptomatic of this team now for a couple of seasons. And if they don't win against the Giants and Vikings, I think he's in real, real trouble.
No, Eric, you're so right. I mean, the turnovers by this team, just Matthew Stafford himself, I believe 12 interceptions in like the last four games or thereabouts.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, they are the most talented team right now in the division. There's no question about that, given the injury situation and all that with the other teams. They're the most talented and they're the healthiest team, and they're really just blowing it.
Well, there's no question. And, you know, the other thing that Schwartz is going to take heat for, guys, is that Matt Stafford was near elite status a couple years ago when they won 10 games and went to the playoffs. And he has gone so straight backwards, and real questions as to whether Schwartz is the guy to get that fixed.
Speaking about quarterbacks, Hub, I know the Buffalo Bills like the rookie E.J. Manuel, but, boy, he's had those knee problems that seemingly have been chronic this year.
Well, it's really curious because he didn't come to the Bills with knee problems. He has not had a major procedure on the knee, but every time they think he's ready, he gets back in the game, and then 1 week, maybe 2 weeks, it starts to swell up, it gets sore. They had a really nice performance, a big performance down in Jacksonville last week, and now Manuel can't go again this week because of swelling in the knee. Doug Marone loves him. They think he is potentially the franchise quarterback, but Eric, at this point, they're starting to scratch their heads and say, boy, you know, we've got to find an answer, and we're not getting it from all the conventional methods.
I hate to even go here, and I hate myself for even thinking this, but doesn't this almost remind you a little bit of what happened with RG3 last year? Just a little bit. I know it's sort of apples and oranges with a playoff team with the Redskins last year and all that, but, you know, it's this concern over how do we handle him? He's a young kid. Is he going to be injury prone, or is this sort of a fluke thing? The offseason is going to be very, very important for this team and how they handle Manuel. I mean, could it be that he comes back at some point and he's fine? Absolutely, of course. I mean, this could be something that they find a good solution to. He gets stronger and bounces back. But we saw how important that second offseason is to development for RG3. Instead of working on his reps and understanding the offense, figuring out the nuances, he was in the trainer's room. He was rehabbing. He was working on that. And that time is so valuable, I think, for a quarterback between the first and second seasons. I hope Manuel has that time to develop.
Meanwhile, in Chicago, Hub, reports of dissension in the Bears locker room over the Cutler-McNown decision. Any truth to the matter?
The reason we're talking about this, Wayne, because it's a little bit old, it came out at the beginning of last week, actually during the Sunday games. It was one of the national news agencies. And the report was so bizarre because it was the opposite. I'm based in Chicago, so I get up there fairly regularly. And the media, to a man, the week before the Cleveland game, were talking about the improvement in the locker room. As a matter of fact, the Friday before, many noticed it was the best day they'd had there all season long. They came out of the Dallas game on Monday night with some momentum, and then they come out of Cleveland with real momentum. And, Eric, what's really strange about this is that Jay Cutler's biggest supporter in that locker room is Josh McCown. How do you get dissension out of that? I mean, you know, there's guys, I'm sure, who thought maybe McCown deserved another shot after being Offensive Player of the Week. But dissension, questions over the starting quarterback was not at all.
Yeah, and, you know, Josh McCown has played, you know, exceptionally well when he's out there in the field, but he's also played his role perfectly. I mean, he's always said, look, this is Jay's job. I'm a placeholder. I'm here to keep the team afloat until Jay gets back. He's been so deferential to him, and I think they've pushed each other. I think they've really helped each other out. It's exactly the kind of relationship you want between backup and starter. And so, you know, I think these reports, everybody was saying, hey, it could be there on another team, on a weaker team, on a team that didn't have control of itself. But, you know, Mark Trestman, the staff, the players, you know, I think they've done a good job of making sure they're all on the same page, and I think they've handled it the way they need to handle it.
We've got the great soap operas colliding in week 16 of the NFL when we come back with more Way We Hear It on your current edition of Pro Football Weekly. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the editor, Hub Arkush, with news and notes the way we hear it from across the NFL. I'm Wayne Larrabee. Eric Edholm joins us from Yahoo Sports. Guys, what would a Way We Hear It segment be without news on either the Dallas Cowboys or the Washington Redskins, the two great soap operas in the NFL today? Cowboys in trouble as they take on the Skins without Justin Durant, Sean Lee, and Morris Claiborne, three starters on that defense, which arguably could be the worst defense in the NFL. But, Hub, with all they've gone through and all the things that have happened, the Cowboys literally control their destiny. Win out, beat Washington this weekend outside our nation's capital, and then win at home over Philadelphia the following week, and they're in.
It's really a curious situation, and yet that's the advantage of having beaten the Eagles in Philadelphia earlier this season. The question that I'm perplexed by is, are they even good enough to beat Washington right now? The Redskins went on the road, had Atlanta down, couldn't get it done. They lost 27-26. Kirk Cousins is not some placeholder in Washington. He's a guy who eventually is going to compete for a starting job somewhere. I'm not saying he'll compete with RG3, and the Skins have not quit on Mike Shanahan. When you look at what this Dallas defense is doing, Eric, this is not a laydown for them at all. It's not just that the defense is playing badly. Jerry Jones can't stop himself from making a mess of this thing. On Tuesday, following the Packers game, he goes on his radio show and defends Tony Romo for calling the audible on the pass that he threw the interception on that arguably cost him the game. I don't know why Jason Garrett would want to stay the head coach in Dallas. It's just a ridiculous situation at this point.
I don't even know where to take this because there are about 15 angles we could go with it. But you're right. I mean, Jerry Jones's fingerprints are all over this thing. I mean, obviously, the decision to take the play calling duties away from Jason Garrett, go to Bill Callahan, who knows why, but called about 15 pass plays in the fourth quarter there when they were sitting on a lead and DeMarco Murray was absolutely gashing the Packers. I'll never figure that one out. Wade, maybe you have an answer, but that and the decision to replace Rob Ryan in the offseason with a completely different scheme, one that was not built towards the talent they had. And so these guys are having to learn on the fly, Jerry Jones, is saying, hey, we go for more interceptions because we know we can't stop any, essentially. it's just amazing. I mean, there's so many layers to this thing. And Hub, you're absolutely right about Kirk Cousins. I wouldn't be shocked if he puts up 350 yards and three touchdowns on him. What could be, you know, London Fletcher's last home game. And there's going to be some emotion out there. And I really think the Redskins can win this one.
You know, it's interesting. The London Fletcher thing, you know, he's probably going to retire. He's the statesman of that team.
Yeah.
And he is going to head out with some kind words for Mike Shanahan, the head coach.
Well, it's interesting because Dan Snyder, in some respects, is Jerry Jones light. He doesn't interview intervene in the on-field stuff so much. But his imprint is all over some of the bad decisions that have been made in Washington. And Fletcher, as the elder statesman, wants it made clear that as far as that locker room is concerned, they want their future Hall of Fame coach to stay there.
Yeah, and who knows where the Shanahan thing is going. I suspect he'll be fired, even if the players, you know, put some sort of support towards him. I just don't think there's a repairable relationship between the owner and he. But it doesn't mean that you can't have an emotional send-off, that he can't have his last home game be a successful one. I think the Cowboys are in real trouble here.
All right, let's take a look at that Texas job. John Gruden is the latest name we keep hearing about going to Texas. But apparently he's not going to go to the University of Texas. He's going to the Texans. Is he a realistic name there, guys?
You know, Wayne, I don't think he's going anywhere, to be honest with you. But he, every job that opens up in the NFL, Gruden's name comes up and he does nothing to quash it. Now apparently it's happening in college too. I guess the new AD at the University of Texas has shown some interest, but the people close to Gruden that I'm hearing from are saying he's not about to venture into the college field for the first time ever. I mean, you know, he doesn't know about recruiting. He hasn't done a lot of this. He just likes to be part of the conversation. He likes to be associated with the big dollar contracts. Now, Eric, I have heard that the Texans would be a likely spot for him only because this is a team that could be a Super Bowl contender in 2014. It's not even like they need some big free agency moves or miracles in the draft. They were there coming into the 2013 season. The wheels fell off. The one reason that Gruden is not likely to go with the Houston Texans either, he wants to go somewhere where the quarterback is in place, the franchise quarterback. And that's the one thing that has to be fixed with the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I mean, right, exactly. They're going to have the first pick in the draft, and they could have their choice of quarterbacks there, so maybe some free agent options. But, you know, if you're John Gruden, you're just sitting back, kicking your heels up and lighting a cigar, because every single year there's an opening of any kind of, you know, significance whatsoever, he gets mentioned first, whether there's a connection or not. You know, an owner with deep pockets or not. I mean, this is just a great situation for him, and he can keep going back to ESPN and Disney and say, hey, up my deal, give me more money. So I think the more realistic names for Houston Texans job, they've already interviewed Lovie Smith. He's a possibility, local guy. They said they already interviewed Wade Phillips. I doubt he gets that job. He's been there, and, you know, I think they're just going to go a different course. But Ken Wisenhunt in San Diego, I think, is a legitimate candidate. And it wouldn't shock me if Bill O'Brien, the Penn State head coach, has the Patriots ties, great experience there, if he becomes a finalist for this job. I think they're going to be interested in him.
All right, stay tuned. We've got the games coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. In the NFL this weekend, after 8 straight losses to open the campaign, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have won 4 of their last 6. Meanwhile, the St. Louis Rams have fared well against teams outside of their NFC West. This season, they're 5-2 compared to 1-4 against divisional foes. It's the Buccaneers and the Rams in St. Louis, and the two quarterbacks who start in this game, Mike Glennon for the Bucs and Kellen Clemens for the Rams, began the season on the bench.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around the NFL at the quarterback position, Wayne, and with these guys, the difference is that Mike Glennon is the future they hope in Tampa Bay. Kellen Clemens is the placeholder until they get Sam Bradford back. You look at Glennon, he is not really the reason that they've won 4 of their last 6. That's more a team finally coming together, gelling. Maybe Josh Freeman was part of the problem. The Rams at home are capable of big things on the ground. The Tampa Bay running defense has been good some weeks, been gashed other weeks. I suspect that'll be the story of this football game.
4-10 Cleveland is at the 6-8 New York Jets. After showing improvement over the course of the first 5 weeks of the season, the Browns have lost 5 in a row and 8 of their last 9 games. Meanwhile, the Jets have dropped 4 of their last 5.
Yeah, the Browns just struggle to run the football. The Jets don't let anybody run the ball on them. They've dropped to 2nd in the NFL run defense, but they're still one of the best. The question with the Jets, they're still, you know, alive in the playoff race, not likely to get there even if they win out, but will Geno Smith these last couple weeks give them some consistency at the position and take care of the football? And will Rex Ryan save his job? We're going to find out how much these players enjoy playing for Rex, because they really need to win the last 2 to end the Rex on the hot seat conversation.
Tennessee is at Jacksonville this weekend. Jacksonville's won four of its last six games after opening with eight straight losses. The Titans, after beginning the season 3-2, have dropped eight of their last 10.
And another coach on the bubble story here, Mike Munchak in Tennessee. Now, with the new people in charge in the Adams family, Bud Adams, of course, passed away several months ago, it's unknown how they feel about Munchak. Adams was very fond of him, hasn't done a great job, hasn't had a great team to do a great job with. They drafted Jake Locker very high just a couple years ago. Now there's reports that they may not believe he's the future at quarterback. They could be looking for a veteran free agent. As far as the Jacksonville Jaguars and Gus Bradley, Shad Khan couldn't be happier with his choice there. It was looking real iffy the first 7, 8, 9 weeks, but all of a sudden Bradley's got these guys playing really good football. They need more talent, but they seem to be pointed in the right direction.
An old AFC West rivalry resumes in San Diego. The Oakland Raiders, the San Diego Chargers. Hey, Hub, San Diego, thanks to Phillip Rivers having one of his best seasons ever, at 7-7, still remotely in the playoff race in the AFC.
Yeah, they're in better shape than most, actually, because 9-7 looks like it will get a wild card spot. Now, can they get there, and then what happens with the tiebreakers? I don't know, but in addition to Phillip Rivers, who seemed to be wandering in the desert the last couple years, Mike McCoy, the first-year head coach, has gone in there and done a great job with him, and they've even done a little better with that defense than anybody expected. Oh, that's the problem. Sometimes the San Diego defense doesn't show up. This one shocked me, Wayne, but another coach on the bubble, we're hearing maybe Dennis Allen out in Oakland. I don't understand why, because I've been saying the last couple of weeks, with what little he has to work with, I thought he had done a pretty good job. But I guess letting your defense give up 56 points last week didn't help the cause any.
Meanwhile, a rematch of the thrilling NFC Championship game of last January. Well, it's a far cry from that, let's say. Atlanta at 4-10, at San Francisco 10-4. And again, that championship game last year, to show you how this is a year-to-year, week-to-week proposition of the NFL, Atlanta last year was the number one seed in the NFC. They hosted the championship game and lost a heck of a battle to San Francisco. The rematch in San Francisco this weekend, the Niners are 10-4. They're on their way to the playoffs. The Falcons are on their way to the offseason.
Yeah, and the Falcons actually have been the number one seed twice in the last 3 years, and that tells me they're likely to bounce back right away with a good offseason. Of course, Tony Gonzalez unlikely to be back. They've got to make better decisions on the offensive line and address the secondary on defense. But they've been competitive. They don't quit on Mike Smith. The story here, though, is the 49ers, Wayne, because they quietly have come right back to being one of the dominant teams in the NFL. They had those four losses, all quality losses, if there is such a thing, and people were wondering, but they are playing as well as anybody in the league right now, including the Seattle Seahawks, who they just beat a couple weeks ago in their own ballpark.
You know, this is not the BCS Hub, but yeah, they those losses San Francisco has, their top quality losses, no doubt about it. Meanwhile, the New York Giants at the Detroit Lions. Lions coming in off that heartbreaking last-second loss to the Baltimore Ravens on a 61-yard field goal by Justin Tucker. And all that did was take the Lions out of first place in the NFC North and drop them all the way to third behind Chicago and Green Bay.
And I will say this. I know we talked in the way we heard about Jim Schwartz being on the hot seat, and he is, and some of the problems with the Lions players. But when I sat there watching that game, and when that ball snuck over the upright and just inside the right upright and over the crossbar, all I could say was, wow. And then I proceeded to say, wow, about six times. I mean, I've never seen anything quite like that. And it had to just be a dagger in the hearts of the Detroit Lions. Now, they're very much in this. The Bears and the Packers are both capable of losing. Well, they can't both lose their last two, but they certainly, one of them could lose two. One of them could lose one. That's all the Lions need. They've got to take care of business against the Giants team that rebounded nicely in the middle of the season, but now over the last 2 weeks hasn't shown up, and you wonder if they will this week.
Pittsburgh and Green Bay, a rematch of the Super Bowl of three seasons ago. Far cry are the Steelers from that level. They're 6-8 coming in. Green Bay 7-6-1, coming off a couple of 1-point victories under Matt Flynn. And it's expected that Matt Flynn, as we tape this program on Friday morning, it's expected that Matt Flynn will start again at quarterback for the Packers. Aaron Rodgers still has not been cleared medically, although he's been practicing the last 2 weeks with the Packers.
Yeah, the Steelers did play their best game of the year last week in knocking off Cincinnati. They've been much better the second half of the season. Roethlisberger playing really well at quarterback. Le'Veon Bell, now that he's healthy, nice job at running back. The offensive line has improved. The defense is still suspect. I can't say the Packers played a great game last week. They did manage to get down 26-3 before the miracle comeback. But Wayne, you know, I've seen the Packers do this before. They're doing what they have to hang around until they can maybe get healthy and make a run. If they get this done, my gut just tells me, if they get this done, Rodgers does get cleared, and you've got a huge game in Chicago next week. Can Matt Flynn do it for him? him one more time.
Well, that's it. Does he have one more present left in that sleigh he's been pulling around these last couple of weeks? Minnesota Vikings playing their best football, Hub, 3-2-1 in their last six games after opening the campaign 1-7. Cincinnati Bengals coming off that defeat you mentioned at Pittsburgh last Sunday night. It was a convincing win by Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh just beat up Cincinnati in that game. The Bengals, however, are 9-5 and division leaders.
And they may be the most talented team in the AFC, certainly on defense, and yet, Wayne, you wonder about what's in the heads of those Bengals players. They find ways to make you doubt them, and they did it again last week. They're a playoff team, I think. They haven't locked anything up yet. That's the curious part about it, and they need this desperately to get there.
Miami Dolphins making a late-season playoff run. They're at Buffalo this week, Hub.
Yeah, you know, and the Dolphins, to me, are one of the best stories in the league. You know, since all the trouble in the locker room, they've gone 6-2. Joe Philbin has done an outstanding job with that football team. You look at the losses they've had, again, like San Francisco, they've played some very tough teams. Now, they don't control their destiny, but common sense tells me if they win out, if they manage to get to 10-6, I think they're going to be a wild card.
Denver at Houston, back when the season began, you thought this was going to be a spotlight headliner kind of game, but it's really not. 11-3 Denver, 2-12 Houston.
Houston Texans will have the number one overall draft choice, could very well be a Super Bowl contender again next year. They've still got the number three defense in the NFL, depends on who the new head coach is. Denver needs a win. They kind of let down last week ago Thursday in San Diego. They just want to get some momentum back for the playoffs.
For all the controversy and everything that swirls around this game, we talked about it. In the way we hear it, Dallas at Washington, great rivalry. The Cowboys at 7-7 win their last two games, and they're in.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, Wayne. As a matter of fact, they could even still lose this one and get in, but that's the way it goes down in Big D. I think they're in trouble, though. I think the Redskins would love to knock them off, and you're going to have to see a completely different Dallas team than what you saw against Green Bay last week to get it done.
Coming up, we start breaking down the big games this weekend on Pro Football Weekly. We resume with this regular season edition of Pro Football Weekly, and welcome back Eric Edholm, staff writer for Shutdown Corner at YahooSports.com. I'm Wayne Larrivee along with Hub Arkish. Guys, we've got a pair of 8-6 division leaders in the Sunday night spotlight game as the Chicago Bears visit the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, at this stage, both control their destiny, win out, and they win their respective divisions and host a playoff game. Eagles had a 5-game winning streak end in Minnesota last week. The Bears got quarterback Jay Cutler back into their lineup and earned a tough victory at Cleveland. How do you see this one, Hub?
You know, it's interesting because the Bears have the 32nd ranked run defense in the NFL, and you really should make them 33rd or 34th because that's how far they are behind number 31. And you've got the number one running game in Philadelphia with LeSean Shady McCoy, and the way Chip Kelly runs that offense, it would appear there's no way the Bears can win this game. Then you turn it around, you realize that the Philadelphia Eagles have the 31st ranked pass defense in the NFL, and they caught the Detroit Lions with no Calvin Johnson. They caught the Green Bay Packers with no Aaron Rodgers. They're catching the hottest passing team in the NFL right now. There's no way the Eagles can win this game. Eric, the only thing I'm betting on here is that there isn't going to be a lot of defense at the link on Sunday night, and I just think the team that has the ball last probably wins.
Yeah, and they caught a Minnesota Vikings team with its backup quarterback down to their third-string running back, no Adrian Peterson. Matt Asiata scores 3 touchdowns on him, and they drop a 48 on him. I don't know what to expect, and especially the secondary. I mean, Kirk Coleman's banged up. Earl Wolf's knee has been bothering him. Brandon Boykin's coming off a concussion. So they've got so many injuries in the secondary. They're small to begin with back there. The safeties aren't great coverage guys, so how are you going to contend with Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffery and Matt Forte coming out of the backfield? And I just don't see it. There's no way that anyone's going to stop him on either side. So it's going to come down to turnovers and who can score touchdowns and not kick field goals, I think.
Well, and there's also been talk that Lance Briggs is ready to come back this week. Hub, you may be able to shed some light on that. That certainly would help the defense. But Jeremiah Ratliff, the former Cowboy, has gone in there and helped that defense as well in recent weeks, hasn't he?
Yeah, Jeremiah Ratliff has been a big upgrade on the defensive line. He's been disruptive, had a real good game in Cleveland, and played the Eagles twice a year, you know, the whole time he was in Dallas. So he knows this club. He knows Shady McCoy. As far as Briggs, the Bears have been really mysterious about this. I suspect he will get some action, but he hasn't played in 9 weeks. It'll be 9 weeks by Sunday. And his comment this week was, you know, it's interesting. What kind of shape am I in? I'm in football shape. Well, I'm coming back against a team that runs 80 offensive plays a game. It should be interesting. So Briggs is a big deal for the Bears, but in this game, I think it's going to be hard for him to make a huge impact.
All right, let's take a look at a couple of division leaders meeting at Arrowhead Stadium as the Indianapolis Colts, who have clinched the AFC South, take on the co-leaders of the AFC West. Now, the Chiefs, in snapping a three-game losing streak, put big numbers on the board in the last 2 weeks, 45 points at Washington and 56 at Oakland.
Well, and of course it was Washington and Oakland, but it's good to see the Chiefs rounding into playoff form. Eric, the one that strikes me about this is more with the Indianapolis Colts. I just don't think that they're going to win a playoff game. They're going to get there, but I don't see them beating a playoff team. Kansas City is that. They've got to go into Arrowhead. They're just not playing well enough. They finally got some points in the first half last week, but too many injuries on offense never allowed them to become the offense that Chuck Pagano envisioned them under Andrew Luck. Defensively, they're good, but not great. I think this would be a huge statement for the Indianapolis Colts if they could go and just be competitive. They don't have to win the football game. I'm not so sure they will, though. I really like the way the Chiefs are playing right now, and I don't like the way the Colts are playing.
Yeah, I agree with you, and the formula seems to favor the Chiefs in the sense that they're playing at home this weekend. Obviously, this could be a rematch in a couple weeks in the playoffs. It would be in Indy if it happened, but, you know, the Chiefs are the kind of team that gets out to a nice lead and then just settles in. They crank up that pass rush. They get the run game going. That's their perfect formula. Well, guess what? The Colts have been the slowest starting team in the NFL. I mean, throw out the game against the Texans. We're talking about the worst team in football record-wise. Other than that game, they have been terrible coming out of the gate. So, you know, maybe they fixed it, but, you know, a sort of a turnover-prone Colts team against the Chiefs team that leads the league in turnover differential, that has the most returns for touchdowns on picks, kickoff returns, fumble returns, etc. I just think this one is a slam dunk for the Chiefs, oddly enough.
Two interesting games, Chicago at Philadelphia and Indianapolis at Kansas City. More breakdowns of NFL games this weekend when we return to Pro Football Weekly. We continue with this Week 16 edition of Pro Football Weekly. New England and Baltimore, and Hub, a rematch of the last two AFC championship games as the Patriots at 10-4 meet the surging Baltimore Ravens, who are 8-6 off their pulsating win at Detroit last Monday night. Despite a two-game lead, this is the interesting thing about this game, Hub. Despite a two-game lead in the AFC East, the Pats can end up with any of the six seeds in the AFC or miss the playoffs altogether.
Yeah, it really is crazy in the AFC this year. And Wayne, it's interesting because one of the reasons is all these AFC teams are flawed. You know, there's no perfect teams in the NFC, but there's three or four that you might take over any of these AFC teams. And the Ravens, I don't know that anybody saw them here. Certainly nobody saw them here 5 or 6 weeks ago. They've won four straight. They've won five of their last six now. But even coming into the season, it had to be a rebuilding year with all the salary cap damage that had to be repaired and all the changes that they made, particularly in that defense. John Harbaugh, just a brilliant job. And what can you say about Bill Belichick? I mean, you look at the defense, and he loses Vince Wilfork, his best player, Gerard Mayo, his second best player. Rob Gronkowski goes down, misses, you know, the better part of the season for the most part, and he's got him here again contending for the number one seed. Plus, the history of these teams, you were just talking about it to me off the air, they've played for the AFC title the last 2 years, and one of the things that sticks out about this matchup is that the Ravens have kind of had the Patriots' number. Even though the Patriots won the AFC title game 2 years ago, was controversial at the end with those plays in the end zone, Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, was hired away from the New England Patriots. 6 years with Bill Belichick as his linebacker coach and kind of de facto defensive coordinator working with Belichick. Now he goes to Baltimore. He's orchestrating the defense there. He obviously has a pretty good handle on what to do with Tom Brady in this offense, and that was even when they had Gronk and Hernandez and all the other weapons.
You know, Hub, the thing that strikes me, though, about New England, they're winning a lot of regular season games on the greatness of Tom Brady and the preparation of Bill Belichick. I just wonder how viable they're going to be with all of their problems in the postseason.
Well, the big problem is the red zone, Wayne, because without Gronk, without Hernandez, without even Welker, even though he's a smaller guy, they don't have a go-to guy. I will say this about them, though. It's still been forever and a day since they lost two games in a row, and the rest of the AFC, as we said, you know, getting to the Super Bowl is doable. I don't know if they can beat one of these NFC teams, but this is a huge game for both clubs, the Ravens for their playoff life, the Patriots for the chance to play at home during the playoffs.
talk about playoff life. The 9-5 Arizona Cardinals take their hope to Seattle, where the Seahawks are unbeaten and at 12-2 overall need one more win to clinch the West and home field throughout the NFC postseason. Seattle won the first meeting in Arizona 34-22, but that was way back in week 7. This is an Arizona team that's been playing down the stretch with some momentum.
They have, and you know, Wayne, I am so impressed by their defense. I'm so impressed by, you know, certainly by Bruce Arians, and I think this is an Arizona team that deserves a better fate. Unfortunately, they are going to the gas chamber. I mean, you go into Seattle and just nobody wins there. You know, this is their bad luck to be in the best division in football this year. You got to play 4 games against San Francisco and Seattle. It is tough. You know, they also had to take care of Indianapolis, but at least they got them at home. They did that. They had to go to New Orleans, or I'm sorry, have New Orleans at home. They were okay with that. But, you know, it's just too much sometimes, and I just don't see how this team's got the horses to go into Seattle and knock them off. Seattle still one more thing to play for. They're going to get the number one seed, but they need this win to clinch it.
Yeah, and again, as we've seen in the NFC with the best teams, with Seattle, with New Orleans, you know, home field is so important.
Yeah, it really does make a huge difference. And, you know, Seattle is actually getting healthier. They were vulnerable maybe a few weeks ago. They did play a couple of so-so games, but I think they're getting back now to where they want to be.
Stay tuned. We've got the headliner. New Orleans and Carolina for all the marbles in the NFC South up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. The New Orleans Saints and the Carolina Panthers, the NFC South Division Championship on the line as the Saints travel to Carolina where the Panthers await. Both teams come in at 10-4. The winner gets the division title and a coveted bye in the first week of the postseason. To the loser, a wild card spot in the NFC. And Hub, this should be quite a matchup, as it was just a couple of weeks ago when Carolina fell 31-13 at the Superdome to the Saints.
Yeah, and I think the thing that is curious as we look at this game, Wayne, is that the Saints put such a thorough beating on the Carolina Panthers. They snapped an 8-game winning streak for the Panthers. They were never really in the game, Carolina that is, and it looked like New Orleans was ready to play Seattle again for the title of best team in the league, and then they go to St. Louis and were just awful against the Rams for 3.5 quarters. They had a little bit of a late push at the end, but this is a New Orleans team that does not travel well. There's no other way to put it. They're undefeated at home and they are mediocre at best on the road. Plus, I would think that Ron Rivera is going to have his fellows a little riled up. I think he knows that he's got New Orleans exactly where he wants them, and this is a Panther defense that is capable of getting very angry.
Speaking of defense, the Rob Ryan defense, what a job he's done down in New Orleans. But the Saints have 17 takeaways this season, 15 in the first 7 games, but 2 in the last 7. That's an unusual stat, to say the least.
It really is, and it's part of the problem, is that when they're being opportunistic and when they're putting the offense in great field position, that's how they get a couple scores up on teams, and then it's impossible to come back on them. But when the Saints have to play even or even barely on the lead, it becomes a whole different situation, and not getting those turnovers make a big difference. The other thing about these two defenses is Carolina is near perfect everywhere. They're second in total defense. They're second versus the run and fifth versus the pass. So it's not like you can attack one way or the other, and they're just second in points allowed. Now you turn it around and look at the New Orleans defense. They're fifth in total defense, but they're only 21st versus the run. You can gouge them on the ground. They're fifth in points allowed, third against the pass. So, you know, pretty solid there. But, you know, that ground game, and that's one of the things that Carolina does really well. Now, they will be without Jonathan Stewart again this week. And so one of the things that the Panthers have not done much of this season, they've tried to keep Cam Newton in the pocket a little bit more. He still had a nice year running the football. I think this is the week where they want to cut him loose. I think you want to tell Newton, anytime you feel like it, go pile up the yards on the ground, because that's one of the ways that we can back these guys off. You mentioned that strange turnover trend for the Saints, Wayne. At the end of the day, through 14 weeks or 14 games, 15 weeks, these teams are tied for fourth in the NFL in turnover takeaway ratio. So I think that tells us that it could very well be a turnover, a big play that dictates the outcome of this game.
Yeah, and the Saints take care of the football very well offensively for a high-flying attack as they are. Hub, context, big picture. Cam Newton, this is his first really huge game, big stage, lots at stake. How much will we learn about this young quarterback?
Well, I think we've learned a lot this year. He definitely has changed. There's no question about that. He understood that his leadership was being challenged. He understood that his me-first attitude was going to be a problem if he was ever going to get to the top. And he understood that he had to be more careful with his demeanor and his facial expressions and his actions on the field. All of that has gotten better. You can tell when you talk to people who are in that Panthers locker room every day during the week that it's a better locker room now. His teammates are more comfortable with him. It's still not perfect. He's still got work to do, but he's gotten better. Now, on the field, he is a unique athlete. I'm not sure we've ever seen a quarterback with his abilities both to throw the football and on the run. The passing game has not exactly been stout for the Panthers this year. They're just 25th in total offense, and as I mentioned, they rely a lot on the run because they're 28th throwing the football. And again, I said New Orleans, third defensively against the pass, so that's where Newton has to establish himself. He's at home. The conditions should be reasonable. He doesn't have a lot of great options in the passing game. Steve Smith is still a really good player, but I'm not sure he's the all-pro he once was. Greg Olsen, a really nice pass-catching tight end. Brandon LaFell has come on, but this is an offense that still needs more weapons for Newton as well.
New Orleans Saints 10-4, Carolina Panthers 10-4. NFC South on the line. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, and here's this week's Publisher's Pen with Hub Arkes. Hub?
You know, Wayne, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I just have this feeling that the NFL left me no choice this week when they decided to hold a press conference to show off all of the wonderful planning they have done in the event of weather disasters for the Super Bowl in New York this year. Now, let me ask the obvious question, okay? If going in, you're preparing for weather disasters for the Super Bowl, was it such a good idea to do this in the first place? Not only did they show off all this outstanding new snow removal equipment and de-icing equipment that they have, but they said they've already got contingency plans to play the game on a Saturday or Monday should the weather force it. They're hoping it doesn't happen. It's not what anybody wants. But why would you plan an event like the Super Bowl knowing that that is an issue? Well, the answer is obvious. The folks in New York stepped up and built a billion-dollar stadium, and that's the way it works. But the hypocrisy of it just makes me crazy because I don't think there's been a better Super Bowl venue. I like New Orleans, but certainly South Florida. And remember when the Colts and the Bears were in Miami and it rained? Oh, it rained. People got wet. And they said, we may not go back there unless they put a roof on that building. And then they went back in 2010 because they had to. They didn't get their stadium in Frisco, and they're still threatening Florida, if you don't do a better job with Joe Robbie, we're not coming back. And yet they're going to go in the ice and snow in New York. There's a side of me that hopes they get a foot of it, and we'll see what happens.
Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. A white Christmas is what you're hoping for. Randy Beyer, producer-engineer of Pro Football Weekly. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. On behalf of Pop Arkish and the entire PFW crew, this is Wayne Larrabee. Happy holidays, everyone. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.